The Late Debate with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
Housing row rages on, but no plan yet on how to clip the wings of cuckoo funds. ESRI confirms it's no country for young men or young women. Ballymurphy 10 get justice after 50-year wait. And snake oil or belt and braces, what's wrong with using supermarket antigen tests? All that and more in tonight's Late Debate, but first the news with Shane McGowan. Thanks, Shane. Good evening and welcome to Tuesday's Late Debate. Joining us tonight, we have Jennifer Carl McNeill, Fine Gael TD for Dunleary and spokesperson on equality. Piers Doherty, Sinn Féin TD for Donegal and spokesperson on finance. Richard Boyd Barrett, People Before Profit TD for Dunleary, and Elaine Loughlin, Deputy Political Editor at the Irish Examiner. We want to hear from you, so do get in touch. Text us on 51551. Email latedebate@rte.ie or tweet to @latedebate_RTE. Now, it's the government's number one priority, but there is no magic bullet. No, not COVID. Housing. The controversy over international investment funds block buying housing estates, keeping first-time buyers out of the property market, continues apace. Ministers met for hours today to devise a system to prevent this from happening again, with proposals expected next week. But the public frustration over the issue is palpable. Jennifer, what is the government considering?
I don't know because they haven't announced it yet, but I think what's on the table is a range of measures from planning to taxation. We do not want housing investment funds buying up housing estate that should be available for first-time buyers. We simply do not want that. There is a role for investment funds in funding the development and building of housing in the first place, but not for buying it up at the end point when they're competing with first-time buyers and other people who are trying to downsize or change their housing because their family has grown, for example. So the government needs to act. It needs to act quickly and it needs to stop it. And I think everything is on the table in relation to it.
And you think it will be that horrible phrase, a suite of measures that won't be just a planning legislation move, it could be a tax move as well, or
it could be. But one of the things I don't like doing is speculating about things I don't know. Well, you know, and they're meeting about it, and I expect to see an answer on it very shortly.
Is there a sense within Fine Gael that there is a preferred option?
No, I don't believe there is. I think what you want to see is an effective option, and so we want to see that, and we want to see that quickly.
Okay, Piers Doherty, what should they be doing?
Well, they should have been doing what we've been asking them to do for many, many years now. Back in 2016, I warned Pascal Donoghue that this experiment has completely failed, that they were pushing up house prices, that they were squeezing homeowners out of the market, and the tax-free status of these funds had allowed them to have additional firepower, which we see at the weekend in the report in the Sunday Business Post, that approved housing bodies are telling reporters that they are offering 80,000 more than the market value
per
of the
house.
Per house. And this doesn't just push up that estate. It pushes up, it sets a new floor for house prices in Dublin. 95% of all apartments have now been bought by the funds in Dublin, and 6 out of 10 houses that have been built in 2019, 6 out of 10 homes were taken off the market and sold predominantly to these funds. So there is a number of proposals we put forward today, which we also put forward last year in the finance bill. Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil and the Green Party voted against them. It's the like of a surcharge on stamp duty, which means that these funds would pay additional for the property. So
yeah, because right now, whether it's a fund that buys a house or I buy a house, we both pay the same stamp duty. Is that the current?
Exactly. If it's under $1 million, it's 1%. If it's over $1 million, it's 2%.
Where do you think it should be set for these
funds?
Well,
we've been arguing for now 3 years in relation to additional taxation on these funds. The proposal we put forward in an alternative budget was an 8%. So there would be a surcharge in terms of the investor funds in relation to that. Now, Jennifer makes the point in that there's a deliberate attempt by government to suggest that these funds, these cuckoo funds or vulture funds, whatever you want to call them, are financing development. None of these funds finance development. What they do is actually purchase the homes off the developer, but they don't finance them. The developer still has to get their finance either through the banks and international finance lenders. But these funds don't do that.
They don't bring finance to the table?
No, there's two types of ways that funding, that PRS sales, private rental sales happen. One is called advanced purchasing. The other one is advanced funding. Advanced funding is what Jennifer kind of suggested, where they actually go in with the developer and fund projects. The experts in the industry who produced a report in February of this year and are involved in half of all transactions in relation to PRSs in the state say that advanced funding doesn't happen in Ireland. Few and far between, if any, is the.
But if you talk to people in that sector, they will tell you that apartment building, which mightn't be going fast enough for any of us right now, will grind to a halt if we take these players out of the market. That's what they tell you. Are they lying about that?
No. Well, what they'll also tell you is that these advanced purchases aren't funding the apartment blocks. What they're doing is they're giving certainty that the apartment blocks will be bought at the end of the day. And that's important. But like, remember that there is a huge appetite for properties in the market, and particularly in relation to Dublin. And what it's also doing is it's actually skewing investment away from home ownership into this sector. And you know, if like 2019, 6 out of 10 homes not available on the market. Therefore, they're setting the prices, they're setting rents in the market. This isn't anything new. Like the Department of Finance did a report on this in 2019. They warned about the idea of these funds being able to set rental prices locally. They also warned in terms of reducing the potential for home ownership. Like, I have a list here, Katie, of 42 transactions that happened in 2019. 5,700 homes bought by the funds.
Like, now, are they homes bought in bulk, or are, because the other story we're hearing, another story that will alarm a lot of people out there in the second home market, that they're contacting these individual investors, maybe not these huge big pension funds, but investment funds, nevertheless, investors, at going to estate agents privately, and homes are whipped away before they ever get up on myhome.ie or DAFT.
Yeah, so what happened in 2019 from the fund's point of view in terms of 42 transactions was 2,909 new homes, so nearly 3,000 new homes bought by the funds, and then 3,000, just over 3,000 second-hand homes bought by the funds. And they were 42 different transactions. So the biggest one, for example, was called Portfolio 16. It was 765 houses in Dublin and 50 houses in Cork. But then there's others, like in Leopardstown, 385 houses. Project Turner was 370. Houston South Quarter, 266.
Now, when you say houses now, are these apartment
units? These are apartments and homes. Right. These are all homes. Now, apartments, like, the government would like us to believe that apartments are not homes. You know, these are all homes. Yeah. And so, as I said, many of them are existing properties.
I'm going to come to you in a second, Richard, but I do want to put this, because I saw your colleague Richard Burke on Claireborn Live last night making a big differentiation between that the thing that we can't allow happen is for these funds to come into the suburbs and start buying these three-bed family homes, and that would we need them to still, you know, fund what's happening in the core, the Dublin's core. I think a lot of people are really, really appalled at the idea that an apartment is not considered a home.
Well, I think an apartment is a home. Having lived in an apartment, I think it's a home. A home is the place that's right for you with your family at the different stages.
But this differentiation has been made by many of your colleagues over the last number of days.
Well, let me answer your question. I think that there's two places for investment in forward purchase, forward planning, forward, whatever you want to call it, Pierce. But what we're talking about is the provision of certainty which enables a person to get finance for development. And you know that. And that's a big part of it. Private land and private development. There are lots of people up and down this country who are living in houses that they bought from a private developer, which was built on private land. There is a role for it. One of the things that we're talking about, in addition to home ownership, is having more rental properties available. And part of Rebuilding Ireland back in 2016 was identifying more funds, more finance in to build apartments, which are homes, but they need to be built and they need to be available and they need to be affordable. The more that we have of them, the more chance that we have that they're going to get to affordability.
Has that worked, do you think, in your view? Have we produced affordable apartments?
In part, but nowhere near enough.
Where
relative are they? Relative to where we were in 2016 at
where
the beginning
are the
of
affordable
the plan.
Apartments, Jennifer?
You're right. The price at the moment is astronomical, and that's because we don't have sufficient supply. Relative to the start of the plan in 2016, where there was absolutely nothing going on at all, we are getting there in part. Let me just talk about Cherrywood.
But one last issue there is where you say we're getting, first, it's partly worked. I don't know where it has worked because I don't know where there's any affordable apartments. But the second thing is, where is the view that the more we build of them, the more affordable they get, because we have now handed over a whole chunk of the market to people who can set the price for these rents.
The more supply there is, the more price eventually comes down. But
that didn't happen the last time we had a big price boom.
One of the biggest issues that we have ever had, is having no real state play in this market. And one of the biggest influences on that is the Land Development Agency, which I know Richard will talk about and he doesn't like. But a big part of that is giving the state a play that's equal to the private investment that has been there to help dampen land price speculation, which has been a key driver of the unaffordability that we have seen for so long.
Okay, Richard.
Well, look, first of all, there is utterly no point in building stuff that people can't afford. That's what's going on. right?
So is there no point in building it at all, Richard?
Well, or should we just try and build it?
No, you didn't, Jennifer. In fairness. Okay. My apologies.
So you just mentioned Cherrywood. I met the developers in Cherrywood, and they told me it's costing $400,000 just to build the places in Cherrywood, right? Now, that means it's going to cost a lot more.
And what is that for apartments?
That's for the apartments.
For
that's
what they're
building. Apartments. €400,000.
Right.
€400,000. Now, that means the rents are going to be astronomical, or if anybody's purchasing them, and I doubt they'll be given the opportunity to purchase them, they will be a lot more. We, by the way, were supposed to get, when the LEHA funding, because the infrastructure in Cherrywood up there was paid for with €15 million of public money. And when that was first brought in, we were told that we were going to get 40% of that development as affordable housing. And that nothing would be less than €300,000. Within 3 to 4 weeks of that document being produced by the last Fine Gael government, that disappeared. There was no 40%. There was no any percent. And the 300,000 cap on price disappeared, right? And now it's, you know, just forget it for ordinary workers. So the reality is the stuff that is being built now, 70 to 80% of working people in this country are utterly priced out of the market, whether it is in the rental sector or whether it is in the purchase sector. Why is this happening? Well, clearly, first of all, the market just can't deliver affordability. That's clear. A lot of it is to do with the hoarding and speculation of land, which bumps up land prices. So they're already carrying a massive cost when they actually get the sites. And now, because they can't actually build affordable housing in the private sector, they want to pillage the public land bank, because that would drive down the cost for them. So the LDA is now about...
This is the Land Development Agency.
Sorry, the Land Development Agency legislation, which is going through the door. In my opinion, it is a heist, literally a heist, of the public land bank. So the disastrous mistakes of letting these investment funds, vultures, cuckoos, whatever you want to call them, into the private housing sector, they're now going to do in the public land bank. And it is a disaster when actually what needs to happen, because it can be done, we see it with council housing for many years, but we see it with Ocoolon, cooperatives and so on. If you build on public land on a not-for-profit basis, you can build affordable housing, you can build council housing that people can actually afford to live in. And that's what we need. And we need to now marshal the building capacity that exists, take it away from these entities that are just building only when it's profitable for them at unaffordable levels. And we need to use that construction capacity to build public and affordable housing on public land. And then simultaneously, we need to close down all these tax breaks for these entities. I mean, it's just shocking. And I mean, I was saying this back in 2012 when Michael Noonan was doing it, when they were unloading the NAMA portfolio, €40 billion of property and land assets handed over to these people, no tax on the rental revenue, no tax on the capital gains. They have made an absolute fortune and they've taken control of the market, right? It is beyond shocking. The mafia couldn't have made up a sort of scandal of this scale. So all those tax breaks need to be absolutely closed down. And indeed, we need punitive taxes on land speculation, on property hoarding, on vacant sites that are being hoarded, because we have huge amounts of empty property in this country. It's just sitting there. It could be refurbished, but the market isn't going to do it. We need the state to step in and take control of that vacant land, those empty properties, and actually provide public and affordable housing.
Let me just give you a flavour of what's coming in on the text lines. Katie, why this obsession with protecting housing estates in the suburbs from investment funds? First-time buyers want to live in apartments in the city as well as houses in the suburbs. Why are the government determined only to protect housing estates in the suburbs? That's from John in Phibsborough. We have Troy Tyson tweeting, not only is the advanced purchase taking a whole load of homes off the market in bulk, but it's also keeping prices up elsewhere, of course, because it sets expectations. People feel that this is what houses will now get. We have Katie Fine Gael have thrown the people to the wolves while they slept with the vultures. I want to bring in Elaine. Elaine, I mean, that's very critical of Fine Gael there, but of course it's a Fianna Fáil, a minister who's in the hot seat right now.
Yes, and you have to hand it to Dara Brian. He did come out all guns blazing last week, almost immediately, to say he was going to, within days, come up with a plan to address this issue after it was raised by both opposition and the media. But now we had Cabinet today, and Cabinet was actually described as underwhelming by a number of ministers who attended that meeting, because both Dara O'Brien and Finance Minister Pascal Donoghue turned up with no solutions, essentially. And we don't have an idea of when measures will be agreed upon. We were told at a post-cabinet briefing, members of the media were told that no date could be given, but that this is a priority. They are working on it, and we know that Pascal Donoghue, Michael McGrath and Dara O'Brien had a two-hour meeting after cabinet, but still no agreement.
Is there tensions between them, do you think? Because you get a sense that they're not exactly pulling all in the same direction.
They're publicly, they're speaking the same language. They're all saying that we need to keep these so-called cuckoo funds in the market, that there's a place for them, but it's not in those housing estates outside, whether it's Mullingar or Newbridge and Kildare or Middleton and Cork. They're not the places that these investor funds belong. But you do get the sense, the fact that we were told last week that this would be, an immediate solution would be found, and now we don't really have a date. It's hoped that measures might be announced in the coming days, but again, we're not really sure. But to go back to, I think, one of the issues that was raised there by Pearce about apartments not being considered homes, and I think it's a really valid point. And perhaps the reason why apartments in this country are not considered homes, because they're not built to be homes right now. Like, unlike in countries on the continent where, you know, apartments are built in the same format as a three-bed semi with the same amount of space and storage, we don't do that here. And in fact, the last government cut down on the amount of space that apartments have to occupy. So if you're living in an apartment right now, what do you do with your Christmas tree? What do you do with, if you're putting away your winter clothes now, where do you put them? There's no space. There's no storage for that sort of thing. Even finding place for a buggy in an apartment can be difficult. So they're built for people who are transient, who want to stay in a fancy, shiny box for 2 years and then move on to their housing estate in the suburbs. And I think perhaps as well, one of the reasons why this has caught the attention of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael in particular is because those housing estates in the suburbs, your three-bed semi, are exactly the type of home that the sons and daughters of traditional Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael members and supporters aspire to own. And now, all of a sudden, they're realising that that aspiration is not a reality and it's not within their grasp.
Yeah, Jennifer.
One of the things that Elaine is right about the design of apartments so far, and we have reduced the sizes to try to deliver more of them, but that is not a sustainable solution in the long term for people to live. What we need, particularly with the planning...
That was introduced by a Fine Gael minister.
Yes, but that this also introduced was the National Planning Framework, which is trying to push compact urban development in our core centres. And part of that is about building up and building real apartments for long-term living, a different way of living, a different way of imagining it, because we simply don't have, from a climate perspective, the opportunity to continue to build three-bedroom semis or four-bedroom semis just indefinitely, in perpetuity, all across the land. We have to build differently. And really good apartments, really big apartments, where people can really build lives, is a core part of that. And that is around, that is in the planning framework. So we did both. I think it's...
Okay.
That's not what's happening.
I just want to bring in Taoiseach Micheál Martin, who came out swinging today. Let's have a listen to what he had to say in the Dáil earlier.
And that's why, Deputy, your party also has questions to answer in terms of the serial objections now to quite substantial housing programmes and projects that have been voted down, whether it is in Talla, where your party voted down 500 houses that could be built, or in Clondalkin, we're up to 800 to 900 houses, again, opposed. That can't go on. Maybe it's in your interest to frustrate the attempts to get housing built. The biggest actor in housing right now, the biggest player, is this government.
Micheál Martin there, addressing your party leader, Mary Lou MacDonald, earlier, Piers Doherty. Have you objected to housing developments in your constituency?
Well, look, I think it's very clear from Neil Martin's response there to the issue of the funds is that he's under pressure and under serious pressure. Sinn Féin hasn't opposed any social housing developments in Dublin.
Have you just personally objected to housing developments?
No, not to my knowledge in terms of social housing developments.
Or private housing developments?
Not to my knowledge, no.
I have.
He's objected to loads.
SHDs, yeah. Absolutely. And I'm objecting to one at the moment in Dunleary, a 13-storey, and this speaks exactly to your point, Katie, or to Elaine's point, because we've 13 stories are proposing, even the council were unhappy about it and put comments concerned about it. The vast majority of it is one beds, right? Little boxes, 13 stories high, bypassing the normal planning process, no consultation, which will deliver absolutely nothing for the local
community. So you have no qualms at all about objecting to housing and delaying housing that is very, very badly needed by constituents of yours?
But it's no good to them, right? It's no good to them if they can't afford it. For 15 years, I've been campaigning for housing development, public and affordable housing development on the Shangana site, right? And Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael governments consistently have done nothing, not a sod turned, right? So when it comes to public and affordable housing, they do nothing. But when it comes to some private developer making money from a site, they facilitate it all the way. And it is completely unaffordable for people. It is of no use. It benefits the community in no shape or form.
Jennifer.
Two things. The Shangana site that you're talking about, Richard, is being delivered by the Land Development Agency.
I've heard that for 15
which
years.
The Land Development Agency is only in existence.
I've heard it's going to be developed for 15 years.
Sorry. And it has permission and is beginning work on 600 social and affordable houses on that site, number one.
Because we campaign for it.
The Land Development Agency.
No,
which
we've been campaigning for 15 years and yous have done nothing about it.
The Land Development Agency, which you're currently opposing, is the body that's delivering it. Secondly, how many thousand houses, apartments, homes have you objected to in Dunleary at this stage, private and public? And you know why? Because I've seen your letters. You don't like who's building it. You don't like how it's being built. You don't like who's paying for it. Do you know how many I've objected to? Zero. Zero. I've objected to zero because I think it's dishonest in a housing crisis. I told people on the doors in January 2020 that I would never object to housing in circumstances where there was a housing crisis, and I've never done it.
I will absolutely oppose stuff that is not going to deliver for the people who actually need affordable housing, right? Of course I'm going to object. As I said at the very outset, Katie, there is no point in building housing that people cannot afford. What we need is to build housing that people can afford.
You played the clip at the start of the segment in terms of Neil Martin, and his accusations are actually completely and utterly false. Sinn Féin hasn't opposed any social housing in Dublin. That's off the record. There's no Part 8 which we have opposed in any council across Dublin.
No, you did oppose a number of projects that you believed did not have the right mix. The Oscar Traynor?
The Oscar Traynor is the sale. It's not a Part 8. It's the sale of the land, and there is a proposal. Let me just say this, Katie. We don't have the numbers to oppose something. Actually, Fianna Fáil and a number of others came together with ourselves to actually put forward a better proposal, which is on the minister's desk to make housing affordable since February. The councillors haven't had a response from the minister, which tells us that this government is the number one priority. But Micheál Martin was there, as I said, desperate because he doesn't know what way to turn in relation to the public anger. And Maynooth was just a lightning rod. Maynooth was a lightning rod which the government didn't want because people are so sick and tired of the high rents. They're so sick and tired that a whole generation is locked out. They're so sick and tired of the fact that these policies that government have rolled out the red carpet of the vulture funds. And Maynooth was a lightning rod for all of that. And that's why this government wants this issue to die down. Their job here will be to do as little as possible because this is something they supported. You know, 6 months ago in the finance bill, we asked them to just look at this issue. They voted against it. Jennifer, her colleagues, Pascal Donoghue, Fianna Fáil, the Greens all voted against it. So in terms of the...
Were you conscious that you were voting against this measure? Were you aware of this as an issue 6 months ago?
I was deeply aware because I was aware of the change that had been made in the Finance Act 2019 in relation to the tax treatment, which put the tax take from this business up from 5% to 20%. So I was aware of the significant changes that had already been made by Pascal Donoghue in 2019.
No, that's like, first of all, the dividend withholding tax, I think everybody acknowledges this year.
It literally went up from 700,000 to 65 million.
I think, look, well, the point I was saying, Jennifer, people, I think, recognise that we actually campaigned for a dividend withholding tax. It was our proposal. And thankfully, the government did introduce it in that finance bill. But the problem is pension funds don't pay dividend withholding tax. That's what, and these are made up of dividends. So what happened with Boris Johnson is, in last year, he brought forward a surcharge on these funds. Why? Because they were pushing up the prices of property in London and the Greater London area. The Department of Finance, we see it from FOIs, were considering the same thing. We put forward an amendment just that you would look at this issue, and you've actually voted against it, which actually just exposes where Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are at. You are happy with the system.
That's how you put down amendments in the finance bill. It has to be that you look at this.
And you voted against.
Those happen all the time.
But you voted against even looking at it. That's the point.
That's how you put the amendment down.
I know, I put the amendment down.
That's how you do it. So I know. It's not about like whether we looked at it or not. First of all, changes have significant changes.
No, you voted against even looking at it. That's the point.
That's how you draft it, Pierce. You can only draft it on that basis, because you can't make financial amendments to a finance bill because you don't have the authority.
I placed that amendment to look at it.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, don't.
Okay, explain to me. Why would you not even look at the issue?
It's too. Look, the point is that's how you draft the amendment.
I know. Okay, well, let's accept that's how you draft them. But given that is how they're drafted, why did you then not agree to look at it?
Because I'm following Pascal Donoghue and what he's doing, and Pan Pierce,
and he follows the funds.
And he has made significant changes to the Finance Act, which I've just told you in terms of the numbers. I think Pascal will happily look at anything.
Do you think Pascal Donoghue is going to be reluctant to revisit this so soon after he made what he considered significant changes
I don't think so. I don't want to speak for Pascal or say that he's going to do things or that I don't know whether or not he's going to do. But what I do know about Pascal is that he's open and he wants to get solutions and he wants to fix things. That's what I know about Pascal. That's what I've seen. There's no ego or anything in this. This is about getting solutions, and if something isn't working, fixing it and changing it. I expect to see that solution from the three ministers involved.
But I can show you speech after speech, amendment after amendment over the last 3 years, where we've been pointing out exactly what's been happening in the Dublin market. You talk about apartments being affordable, and nobody's going to buy an apartment in Dublin. They're not available. There is no apartments on the market in Dublin. There won't be, because of the structure that has been created, the tax efficient structure, and now apartments are gone beyond the reach of anybody with a reasonable income in Dublin. That's the reality. But for since 2016, we've been pointing this out. We've been placing amendments, and every single year, despite the focus on this year, it is voted down by Fine Gael. In one of my contributions when I was tabling the amendment, I actually made the point that if the public knew what was happening in this committee, they would be livid. Because what happens in the Finance Committee, in the bunker in Leinster House, is Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil were voting for a tax structure that allowed for little, if any, tax to be paid, which was pushing up prices and squeezing out home ownership in Dublin and the surrounding areas. And the report from the insiders, the insight, is actually saying Limerick, Waterford, Cork and Galway are next. That's where the investors are going to pounce on, and we need to do something, and it needs to be serious.
And yet, Piers Starty, when the Amoric poll that Claire Byrne was done for the Claire Byrne show last night, 1,000 adults asked, do you believe that Sinn Féin can solve the housing crisis, or do you believe Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael can solve it? Fianna Fáil, 10% believe they could. Fine Gael, 12% believe they could. Sinn Féin, 24%. Okay, double the number. But still, are you disappointed that so few people, given you have made such a play, as you have just said, they are year after year, Ona Brin, very high profile, putting forward solutions here, but only 24% of people who were polled thought that you had the answers.
Yeah, look, of course you would like 100% of people to know that we would do it. Look, we've been asking people to give us a chance to put us to the test in relation to the proposals that we have brought forward, which is about really doubling the investment we need in social and affordable houses and cost rental. It is about closing down the loopholes in terms of the vulture funds that are squeezing people out. And it is about making housing affordable. It is also about freezing rents and putting a month's rent back in people's pockets through a tax refundable tax credit. I can understand why people don't believe these things. It's the same thing as in terms of health, because people have been told time and time again that this was going to be fixed by another government. Fianna Fáil are saying they're making it their priority. What, since last week? Like, and the reality is, the situation has only got worse. So I can understand why people are tired, but I do recognise in that poll that double the amount of people believe that Sinn Féin and Owen has the solution compared to Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael.
That ESRI report that came out today, the timing could not be worse for this government, given the torrid week they've just had. But it is shameful what that says about the situation that people born in the 1980s and 1990s have found themselves in now. Is it not? After 10 years of Fine Gael in government, Jennifer.
Yeah, the report says two things, that incomes have substantially changed, that income inequality, intergenerational income inequality has gotten much more difficult. And it is all born from the housing crisis that we're talking about. There's no point in saying otherwise. It is born of the housing crisis that we're talking about. But you've mentioned 10 years there. You go back 10 years, because I remember 10 years ago looking at ghost estates and leaflets from a whole range of different politicians about how they should be knocked down and so on. It seems like a very long time ago, but that was the politics of the day and that was the housing situation of the day. We have had to start 5 years after that, when finance began at all again, when the state began to have any sort of investment position at all, to start all of that again, to rebuild local authorities and others.
This is on Fianna Fáil's head.
No, I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying that we've gone through as a country 10 years of a very difficult period through an existential financial crisis and a housing crisis that has followed. Fine Gael has been in government through that period, but it's important to recognise what we have been trying to do and the first period of that, which is to just recover the state financially at all. But no, I'm not interested in that blame game and who did this and who did that. I just want to see it fixed. I'm a new TD here. I just want to see it fixed.
I'm a tech worker and earn well above the average wage on €100,000, but not interested in the crazy expensive apartments to live in Dublin. No thanks. London, Amsterdam, Berlin, New York are cheaper. I can't listen to a Fine Gaeler being proud of not objecting to any housing. There are houses and apartments all over the country that are not fit for purpose, which were built during the Celtic Tiger and are completely inadequate. And hi, Late Debate. I'm in my mid-40s going through a divorce and I'm stuck in a house share for 2 years. I make twice the minimum wage paying maintenance and looking for a small cottage. And the only thing I can afford is to wait for my mum to pass away and hope some inheritance comes. That's a listener in Cork.
Katie, I think that's a very important point to make, because we assume when you're talking about buying houses in this country that it's a couple, and there are so many, whether it's divorcees or single people who'd like to own their own home and who are beyond, you know, sharing with two other relative strangers. But at the moment, you're looking at kind of having to have an income of above 70,000 to do that on your own. And that's just not possible for the vast majority of people who are looking to buy on their own. So I think that text is really important and possibly not focused on enough.
Yeah, exactly. We do tend to talk about first-time buyers as if they are the only people in this debate. Yes, Richard.
See, that's the point. What we need is planning. Right. If you're going to deliver housing that actually meets the needs of people and is affordable, you need a thing called planning. And Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are addicted to the opposite of planning. They are addicted to the chaos of the market. So we incentivize, we get them tax breaks, we change the planning laws for them, and imagine that these profit-hungry market players are going to solve a crisis and deliver sustainable housing that actually meets the needs of people, when those interests have no interest in doing that. That's not what they're about. They're about maximising the value of a site.
But were we not in such a place after the crash that we needed some funding flowing through?
No, actually, this is a terribly important point, because we were arguing this with Michael Noonan and Brendan Howland in 2011 and 2012, when I first came into the Dáil. We actually had the opportunity in the depths of that crisis to solve one serious problem in this country, and that was the housing crisis, because we had the NAMA property assets. The biggest real estate company in the world was in state hands. And instead of using it, as we begged the government to do at the time, to solve a pre-existing housing crisis and use it for social and affordable housing, they insisted. They insisted on flogging it off to these vulture funds. And we're in this mess now. So we need to unravel and we need to take the market back from those players.
Was it not an issue over those years that for a lot of Fine Gael voters, for a lot of your base, negative equity was a huge problem? So reinflating the housing prices and balancing the bank books was a huge priority for Fine Gael.
Well, it was about recapitalising, restructuring the banks so that there was a functional banking system, which is important for everybody in this country, business, homeowners and everybody else. That was what the NAMA project was about in the first instance. And the state having taken such a hit on having to finance all of that, NAMA was obliged to get that back, that money back to the state to try to contribute to the public finances. We forget those things, as those things weren't core political objectives of that period. But Richard has talked about, you know, some
but
kind of development.
Affordable housing for the citizenry, not a core political objective
of
that period.
It was a core.
Where was that lost along the way?
It is a core political objective of all periods. But at that time, 2011, 12, 13, the overarching framework, if you remember going into the beginning of 2014, it wasn't clear if we were going into a second bailout or not. Now, that changed over that 2014 period.
To the state. It would have delivered revenue to the state because it's delivered huge revenue to these investor funds.
That changed over that period. Two things that Richard has said. We are the party that brought in the National Planning Framework, which is the first time there's been a planning statutory base, on a statutory basis, a real plan for the development of this country, which is about climate-friendly, compact urban development. That's on a statutory basis because of the work of Fine Gael. And in relation to the Land Development Agency, which you completely ignore as a possibility, that one of the things that they're going to do in Shangana is develop different types of housing, different types of cost rental, long-term availability for people coming out of divorces, get a fixed price, people who are on a fixed income and get real opportunities for different types of homes over that period. But you just say no
Jennifer,
to everything.
Jennifer, just hold on. I'm not going to let that pass, okay? Factually speaking, the Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil people who dominated Dunleary Rathdown County Council for ages were insisting there was private housing on the Shangana site. We, People for Profit, specifically put down the motion to say that site should only be social and affordable housing. And because there was such a public outcry against Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael's attempts to partially privatise that site, you eventually buckled and supported our proposal to keep it 100% social and affordable. But that's only because of people power. That is not what the LDA is doing everywhere else. Everywhere else, the LDA is committed only to 10% social housing.
No, that's not true.
That is not true.
The Land Development Agency is about delivering three things. It's about delivering social and affordable housing, but it is also about delivering additional housing. And if it wants to partner, within its structures, within the board approval, to do that with different types of investment, it's not just about public land. It's not just about public land. It's about developing on private land, and it's about providing a countervailing force in the market on land price speculation and giving the state real teeth. When the legislation goes through, it'll be capitalised to €1.25 billion, which gives it an actual countervailing weight against the Glenveighs, the Cairns and all of those, which it changes the market dynamics very considerably. Why do you think the share price of Glenveigh fell off a cliff after the Land Development Agency was announced? Do you think it was because we were supporting private developers?
It's actually dancing to the tune
please,
of Glenveigh.
As
dancing to the tune
the
by setting the
opposite.
Prices at prices that are acceptable to Glenveigh.
Okay. In relation to that, I mean, it's not just People for Profit or Sinn Féin that have issues, have raised issues around the Land Development Agency. Many commentators on this industry and planning have issues as well in relation to that. And can I ask you as well about the other part of that legislation that was brought forward, the Affordable Housing Bill? Where do you stand on that?
I think it contributes to bridging the gap between the macroprudential rules that the central bank has issued and the cost of housing, but I don't think it's the panacea. I think it's one of the different things that we need to contribute to.
That many from the central bank to Robert Watts to ESRI, you know, the array of people who are waged on the other side of this saying this will just give money to developers and drive up house prices.
I have always been concerned about demand side initiatives. I've always been focused on supply, on delivering supply and things that will contribute to supply. But I recognise that a bit like the Help to Buy scheme, you know, this contributes to people who are really facing urgent affordability problems. But I would rather see, you know, exclusively supply side measures because I think it's going to be what is effective in the long term. But
you sound decidedly lukewarm now on that one.
I think it's a measure that can contribute. And I think any measure that can contribute to easing affordability. But I don't want to overpromise on it.
Will it contribute to rising house prices for everybody else?
Well, I don't. I mean, like a bit like the Help to Buy, we have the same questions around Help to Buy. Anything on the demand side can do that. That's what the ESRI are reflecting from my reading of what they're saying. I think we need to be focused on supply-side measures as being the real solution. And I think that's what you've heard the government saying again and again.
The warnings in this one have been stark. Like, seriously, like, the central bank brought in their rules for a reason, for, you know, and that they're very tough on people who can't get the deposits or maybe are outside the income thresholds. But they've done all the research to show that if they weren't there, this is house prices would even be higher. Like, they've warned against this. Robert Watt has warned against this. We've been warned against this, the Department of Finance, the Department of Public Expenditure, yet the Minister and indeed Jennifer will vote for this when it goes through in terms of legislation.
And
the problem here, the thing is, we shouldn't be taking, there's sometimes you take risks, right? Because, you know, you just need to do this, and we've done this in finance, and we've supported things in finance bills, and then you have to pull back if it doesn't work out. With this, at a point when so many people are squeezed out of the market, when houses are unaffordable, when every of those agencies are telling you that this can push up house prices, you don't take that risk. It's absolutely ridiculous that you take that risk.
Is it
at this
time,
point in time
for one of your colleagues to take Dara O'Brien aside and have a word about this, Jennifer?
No, look, I think the in addition to the affordable housing bill, what in addition to the shared equity scheme, which is, I think, what you're focused on here, yeah. There's a whole range of other measures in that bill which I think can deliver huge progress in and around cost rental.
That's
which
not
is
what I asked you.
On the shared equity scheme,
yes.
I think, look, we keep it under review. We let it go, let it happen for a year. Let's see what happens. Keep it under review. I think, as I said, it can be a contribution, but it's not the panacea as far as I'm concerned. The supply side measures, making real changes around having cost rental, which means long term fixed rents for, you know, for 5 and 10 years, really making that difference.
Why did this even
That's
get
much
on?
More important.
Why did this even get onto the government's agenda? Like, everybody knows in Leinster House who wanted this. It was the developers who lobbied for this. Yeah, I'm sure you'll accept this. They lobbied Sinn Féin as well before the election. You know, the Robert Watt in his memo makes a point that developers are looking for this because it will deepen the pockets of the developers by pushing up house prices. Like, so the developers have lobbied for this, and it ends up in a government programme for government. There are so many other issues in terms of freezing rents or rent rebates. There's so many things in terms of, you know, other priorities that we could have been doing. But yet, how come the developers have such an ear to it? Nobody was proposing this until the developers actually came to government buildings and told, yeah, we'll do that. Even though everybody's warning this is a bad idea.
Okay, we will leave that there because we will return to this again and again and again, obviously. But I want to move on now to that story about antigen tests, because the Minister for Health, Stephen Donnelly, has responded to Professor Philip Nolan's comments comparing antigen tests to snake oil. The NPHET member tweeted in response to a little advert for the test. This is the tweet. Can I get some snake oil with that? It makes for a great salad dressing with a pinch of salt and some acerbic. Stay safe when socialising outdoors over the next few weeks. Small numbers, distances, masks. These antigen tests will not keep you safe. Here's what the Health Minister said in response to that.
I don't think it was a helpful comment. I have great respect for Professor Nolan. I have no doubt that his concern was around people using them in the wrong way. The fact that if you get a negative result, it really doesn't necessarily mean you're negative at all, that it could create a certain risk. But they are one part of the toolkit we have.
Yeah, and of course, Tony Hoolan last week said, don't use them, don't buy them. This is about these $24.99 packs of five antigen tests being sold by Lidl. What do you think, Richard?
Well, I decided to ring up my immunologist friend in Trinity College to find out the answer to this one. And what he said is they can be useful in detecting cases. So one shouldn't imagine that they're a way of screening the population. They can't substitute for the more accurate PCR tests. And for all the other measures we need, vaccination, public health measures, until the vaccination, you know, gives us the immunity we need. However, what they can do is be an additional tool in detecting more cases. And that he said, and I agree with this, there have been some pilot experiments with them in places like, say, for example, trying to reopen parts of the event industry where they've done particular pilots to see are they effective? And I think it might be worth doing a few experimental pilots in that area. But what we shouldn't imagine is that they are a way of screening the population.
But are you surprised at how anti-antigen tests NPHET appears to be.
I think NPHET are worried that the population will see them as the silver bullet. Although I hate that expression at this point, but that they will see them as a silver bullet, and that's their concern. So they don't want to send that message. But I think as long as it is explained to people, and I have great faith in people's intelligence, if you like, in trying to grasp the difficulties and complexities of this awful pandemic that's gripped us. I think if it's properly explained what their uses can be in workplaces, I think they could be useful for identifying tests, but then they have to be immediately followed by actual tests, but and they don't substitute for the other measures.
Jennifer, should they be showing us how to use them? There seems to be an almost a reluctance, like just we're not having anything to do with them. We're not going to in any way explain anything.
First of all,
them.
They are being used and have been used for some time in meat plants, for example. And HICWA recommended that, and the minister has made sure that has happened.
Domestic use we're talking about.
I think
now.
Look, there's I first raised this with the minister back in October 2020, the opportunity for antigen testing to contribute to that. Antigen testing plays a valuable role in the sense that it can catch somebody who's infectious, but it's not a perfect system, but it's a contribution. But it's particularly useful where you're testing groups of people to identify the one or two asymptomatic but infectious people within that and to try to reduce the transmissibility from them. Great.
We're being
fantastic.
Told not to do that.
Fantastic. But the thing about it is, if you look at how we have learned an awful lot during the pandemic in terms of our behaviour, we've learned how to use masks properly, which might sound a bit simple. But, you know, antigen testing is a follow on from that. We can learn it. OK, it's a bit more complicated and a bit more difficult. If you've had an antigen test, you know, it's not a comfortable thing necessarily, but it can contribute. And certainly when you're looking at universities going back, I think it can play a really important role in opening up things more broadly. But there's a lot of steps to go through. But I do think, like, I understand why the difficulty that NPHET have. We're at this very sensitive time in reopening and vaccination and the crossover between those things. But it can play a role.
Yeah, Piers, the messaging is so mixed on it. People will not know whether to come or go with these now.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me back when we were talking about face masks and, you know, the government's kind of view at the time, and the information wasn't there, you know, and then we all said, right, we need to do it, and we learned how to wear a face mask properly.
Is there this sense that we're not being trusted? Like at that time, there was that sense that, oh no, we can't do the masks things because people won't wear them properly. Yeah. They'll end up spreading more infection. They'll end up thinking they're safe when they're not. And that's exactly what we're hearing now about these.
And that's the point. I think, like, I believe antigen, and the party believes antigen tests and has a role not to replace PCR, but to supplement it in some areas. But it has to be part of a public health programme. So it has to be part of a proper public health. So if Tony Holohan or somebody else or Philip Nolan is worried that we'll all get this sense of false security, then let's do a public health campaign, which actually explains to people, no, that's not what antigen testing is for. This is what it's for. It's to supplement this. And yes, it can detect, it can give you false positives and false negatives, but it is there to help us. And look, there's certain
things. Would you
things.
Use one? Say if you were
Absolutely.
Going to...
Absolutely.
You had to go to some gathering tomorrow and you were worried.
Yeah, well, look, you know, like, you know...
Have you used them?
No, I haven't used them at the minute because they're only available in the market, as far as I know anyway, recently. But look, there are situations where, like, you know, you might be allowed to go into, you know, to visit a loved one, but the loved one might be a vulnerable person, you know, and even though they're vaccinated. So if there was an answer, that would be good, because if it was a positive, you wouldn't do it. You know what I mean? You would book in for a PCR test and that would be good protection. So I think there is a role, and definitely as more things are going to open up, I think there's definitely a role in this. The European Commission has proposed this back as far as November.
So they're widely in use all over
Europe.
These things. Let me bring in Elaine. Elaine, I want to talk to you about NIAC, now expected to decide about this Johnson & Johnson vaccine and AstraZeneca vaccine later this week. This is going to have huge implications for whether or not we can meet that target of 82% of the adult population vaccinated by June.
Definitely, Katie. And a government spokesperson was asked about that earlier on today. He said that they're still confident and hopeful that 82% can be reached by the end of June. But obviously, it will be very much dependent on what NIAC have to say. We're hoping that they will come back to the health minister later on this week. We'd been told last week that it would be last week. So again, we're waiting. And it will also play into the former discussion on antigen testing, because I think the reason why the government perhaps is so keen on antigen testing, even if the likes of Tony Holohan and Philip Nolan are not is because all of these promises that they're coming out with and giving us hope with around, you know, the reopening of stadia for crowds, perhaps with Catherine Martin coming out saying we might have concerts both indoor and outdoor in over the summer. Simon Harris as well has promised a full return of third level, hopefully from September. Again, though, he was putting a lot of stress on these antigen tests. And they will only work in tandem with the vaccination of people and having a significant cohort of people vaccinated. So both have to work together. So we definitely will be hoping that NIAC will give some good news later on in the week.
Yeah, a lot of pressure being put on NIAC. Jennifer, would you agree with me there? You know, they're basically being asked to make very big calls, which have huge implications for our vaccination programme.
They are. And, you know, we've seen that ebb and flow over the last number of weeks. And, you know, it is difficult and they're in the full glare of the public eye and the political eye. And that does place a pressure. But hopefully it's a pressure that they'll just be able to, as they have done to date, continue with making good assessments, you know, with the EMA and our vaccination programme can continue to get on with it.
OK, I'm just watching the clock there. Can I put you before we move on? I want to get to the Ballymurphy thing before we finish, but I do want to ask you about what's happening in Derry over the border from you, Piers Doherty. We see there the family of Martina Anderson, the MLA today, accusing Sinn Féin of publicly humiliating her. It's a body blow, this news. The request for her to stand aside is a body blow. We Andersons believe that if Martin McGuinness were alive, he would never have allowed this disgraceful tactic to be deployed.
Well, look, Katie, I think, you know, we've seen in terms of the election, particularly the Westminster election in Derry, where we lost the Westminster seat. We didn't want to see that happen, but it not only did we lose it, it was to a majority of 17,000. There was a big issue there. So the party went in and reviewed, listened to people on the ground. And the outcome of that review is that there need to be a renewal in the city so that there's a plan in relation to doing that. Just like we did it in Donegal over 10 years ago when we had no seats
in
Donegal.
Pretty brutal though, pretty brutal.
Well, look, you know, this is part of change, and change is difficult. I expect that the best years are still ahead for the party in terms of Derry. I know Martina well. She's a member of the national leadership. And, you know, we've...
Do you
we've
have sympathy
at,
for her?
Look, these are comrades of ourselves, you know, absolutely. And, you know, we understand that. She was approached. She has decided to not seek re-election.
I don't think she decided anything. I think
Martina's her own person at the end of the day. And look, but it is difficult, and you know we recognise that, but we hope that this is part of a rebuilding of the party in that area, reconnecting with the votes that we had in that city and building to win back the support and more in the future.
Okay, just in the last few minutes, obviously huge news and relief and joy for, if you can call it that, after 50 years for the family of the Ballymurphy 10, Justice Keegan finding that 10 people who were shot dead were entirely innocent and that the British Army was responsible for the deaths. Your reaction to that, Piers Doherty? As good as they could have hoped for process?
There's limitations in relation to inquests, and this is huge relief. Nobody knew how this was going to go. This is 50 years on. This is a huge campaign that those families have fought for many, many decades, and my thoughts are with the families. I know that they're going to sit down and look at the findings of the inquests individually and decide then what's the next steps. But you know, there was another big announcement which has happened, which really is really hurtful, and that is the British government tearing up the agreement that they entered into.
Now, it wasn't in the Queen's speech, so are they still playing games with this?
Well, look, you know, we had a meeting with Brandon Lewis last week, as did Simon Coveney. He had a meeting when he was in Dublin. He didn't mention anything in relation to this when we were dealing with legacy. We do know that the British government are not implementing the Stormont House Agreement, which was agreed by all the parties in both governments in 2014. And that's no mean feat. Like, that's all the parties in two governments agreeing how we deal with legacy and how we deal with legacy that puts victims at the centre. And the only party that it's reneging on that is the British government. So when the news came out that they're looking at an amnesty for British soldiers, and this feeds into where the Ballymurphy families are at tonight, it's deeply hurtful. But it's not just the Ballymurphy families. There's many other families who will be looking for their own justice, their own closure, and the Stormont House agreement provided the mechanism for that. It wasn't just actually the Stormont House agreement. When we got the Assembly back up and running, it was also part of that agreement, which the British government signed up to. So I think there's a job for us to do collectively here to actually enlist the support of the European Union, our friends in Washington, to put pressure on the British government to live up to these commitments. And today just shows the importance of that fight that many families have been taking for many, many years.
Okay, I'm going to have to take a break. We'll be back after this.
The Late Debate with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
And we're nearly out of time. I'll just give you a few more of the texts. We're getting a lot of texts in, obviously, on the housing issue. Katie, in the 1890s, people sought fair rent, fixity of tenure and fair sale. I think it was freedom of sale, if I remember my history lessons well. We have now replaced the Brits with the vulture funds. And a couple of texts in relation to the antigen test. As an essential worker travelling through the pandemic, antigen tests are required in addition to PCR tests to get into a lot of countries worldwide. And of course, that is an issue for a lot of people. Very quick one for you. Kate O'Connell, standing aside now from the Dublin Bay South by-election. A big loss?
Oh, yeah, I like Kate, you know, and she was a good TD and a hardworking TD. The membership decide who's going forward. I have my own, you know, I'm aware of that in Dunleary to be selected as a TD myself for the next election. I hope they will pick me, but it's something that I always have to be conscious of, and that's the way the Fine Gael party runs. And you know,
sad to see there's not a woman, given the dearth of women in Leinster House.
I am, and I'm sad to, you know, but I'm glad to see Maria Byrne elected to the parliamentary party through the Shannon by-election. And we have a lot more work to do. I'm very glad that there's a 40% quota for the next election, because it's one of the key steps that we need to take to ensure rebalancing of our politics to make it more representative.
Okay, we'll have to leave it there. That's all we have time for. The programme tonight was produced by Caroline Dalton. Research was by Andrew Fleming. The broadcast coordinator was Elaine Conlon, and Jamie Doyle was on sound. I want to thank my panel. I want to thank you all for listening, and hand over now to Colm Murray on Late Date.